You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 24th, 2010. This is episode 120, YouTube in the Classroom. We are back again with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and its impact on the church, and specifically today, the classroom. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. I'm always excited for this show. Love the good ideas that we get from it.
Yeah, and we're not alone, as usual, in our classroom technology segment. We have Gail Potratz with us from New London. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
Good to have you back with us. How have you been?
Thank you. We're doing pretty good here at Emmanuel. I have a little cold, but other than that, things are going well. We're busy into the Lenten season, and all of us looking towards spring.
Okay. Yeah, that's for sure. Every time I see a flake fall, I wonder what in the world is going on. But then I remember where I live, so where we all live. So
right.
All right, Classroom Technology Week, and we've got an interesting topic, at least in my mind, that will, I think, have some immediate impact, and I think everybody has an opinion on YouTube, right?
That's right. YouTube in the classroom is a bit controversial.
Why do you say that? Why do you say it's controversial?
Well,
why do you say it's controversial, Sally?
Just because of the potential of exposing your kids to some of the shadier sides of the internet, because YouTube is open source to all types of video, and with the good that is prevalent out there, there's also a lot of bad. So you have to be careful if you do choose to use YouTube in the classroom, but it is definitely a communication channel that is very popular. I think we have a stat that tells us that it's the second most popular search engine in the world these days.
Right behind Google, right. And it's a common destination, and I think more and more in educational circles, which is the focus of our topic today, is, you know, it does have uses for in the classroom. Gail, do you use YouTube in the classroom?
I have used YouTube in the classroom for years and years already, and I've never had any problem. I know that there are plenty of schools who block it, plenty of whole districts that block it. And that frustrates a lot of teachers in those districts because of the great amount of educational material there is available to people on YouTube. Sally's mentioned the Common Craft videos. I'll throw those in for an example. There's so much there for your own personal learning network that you can use it for besides what you use with the kids.
So yeah, you kind of have a dual, dual approach or dual use of it. Go ahead.
It's like everything else. We have a policy in our acceptable use policy that kids are not on the internet unless there's a teacher present in the classroom or the workroom. And if kids are on task, and we teach them how to use this correctly, I think we'll do okay with it.
What kinds of content are you finding on YouTube that's useful for the classroom?
Historical things. There are a lot of historical pieces out there where people have collected bits of historical things that kids can search through and find. Of course, kids like the more modern things with the songs, and we actually use a lot of the Christian songs and songs with action and staging. We've used those in our classroom devotions.
Okay.
You know, sing with those in our devotions. There's just about any subject you have, you can find something on YouTube to use.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and researching for this show, I was kind of surprised because there are areas that I hadn't made use of before, but I found a YouTube group which I didn't even know there could be groups on YouTube. That's how much I've used it. But dedicated to K through 12 education. So there's a whole collection of people that are gathering videos appropriate for K through 12. There's another place on YouTube, a whole higher ed oriented site, youtube.com/education. Found calculus in 20 minutes posted there. So lots of more higher ed oriented videos available there. So if you do some digging, you can certainly find great resources to use in the classroom.
Right. We actually use it more for the uploading, like I think, than we do for research. We, you know, use it for when kids produce an iMovie and we want to put it onto Final Web, for example, we'll upload it to YouTube so that we can get that embed code and then put it onto the website.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that has been a knock against YouTube is all the clutter around it, and you're never quite sure if you're playing a video what you get at the when you play the video itself. You may get related links that are to content that you may not want the kids to be aware of or to see or to be in front of. But there are apparently tools that have kind of an emerging market around YouTube that allow maybe a more effective and cleaner use of YouTube.
Definitely. And there are getting to be more tools. The one that is kind of the premier that's been around the longest is QuietTube. Mm-hmm. And I know we've mentioned that before. And what that does is you go to QuietTube and all you do is drag their little icon into your browser toolbar. And then when you're on YouTube and there's a video there that you want to show in class, you just click on your QuietTube in the browser toolbar, and it puts a black screen background, or white, you have your choice, around everything else. All you see is the video. Uh-huh. And you can actually watch it there, or you could, of course, copy that new URL, which includes that QuietTube piece in it, and post it on a website. So when people click on it and bring it up, they bring up just the QuietTube interface with the movie in it, not the whole real YouTube site. Uh-huh.
Yep, and thanks to Jason Schmidt, last week a tweet came through sharing a new site called SafeShare.tv. I guess I don't know how new it is, but it does say it's in beta when you go to the website, SafeShare.tv. And I was a little more impressed with this one because I don't have to do the whole bookmarklet thing. I like the fact that I can just paste in the URL right on the site and get a URL in return that I can use however I want to, share the link, whatever. Another feature that SafeShare.tv has is it allows you to clip out sections of the video. So you can tell it a beginning point in minutes and seconds and an ending point in minutes and seconds. And that's embedded in the URL. And so if you only want to show one segment of a video and not the whole shebang, get to the point or whatever, you can do that real easily with SafeShare.tv. So I think that's one I'll be making use of. I have a couple of links to include in the show notes showing examples of SafeShare and QuietTube, so you can check it out.
Another thing that we should probably talk about as far as distraction-free YouTube are the alternatives to YouTube, because there are a bunch of them, right?
Yeah, TeacherTube, it probably comes up at the top of the list from a teacher's perspective. They seem to have gone a lot more heavy with advertising on TeacherTube. When I visited this time, you get a lot of pop-up kind of advertising around the edges and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But certainly a large collection of education-oriented videos. I found a couple of others, teachersdomain.org and WatchKnow. And we'll include links to those in the show notes. I don't have experience with those specifically, but they looked interesting and had a lot of education-oriented videos for free viewing and download.
Mm-hmm. And I think YouTube themselves are realizing that YouTube is being used in educational settings and are providing, as you mentioned, these groups. There's also an EDU section to YouTube. I think it's mostly focused on higher ed, at least what I saw, but you get all kinds of lectures from very prestigious universities. Cities like MIT and Stanford and Oxford and those kinds of places on all different kinds of things, whether it be calculus or English or whatever. And kind of a fun thing that I ran across when I was looking at YouTube is youtube.com/disco. And it's really not about disco, but it's basically a music discovery project where you can type in an artist and build a playlist of all of the videos on YouTube related to that artist, either from that artist or from related artists. So yeah, I found I had a lot of fun with that the other day, just typing in a bunch of different artists. And you'd be amazed at the number of music videos that are available on YouTube. Maybe to close the conversation here, we should talk a little bit more about practical uses. One thing that we talked about in, you know, kind of our pre-show conversation is just the hosting of Kid Productions. We talked about in past shows, we've talked about displaying our kids' artwork or photography or their work, their writings online. But YouTube is a great platform to display that as well.
Yeah, in our school, we've done projects with the kids where they've actually created their own puppet kind of shows for mm-hmm. Easter and Christmas, and we videoed those. They narrated, they wrote the stories. They were thrilled to death that they were going to have a worldwide audience right. have a video that they created on YouTube, you know. So it is, you know, kind of a menagerie of offerings out there on YouTube, but why not sprinkle it with God's word and, you know, the work that these kids are doing, and that's an exciting thing for them.
Yeah, certainly a public way to proclaim the gospel. Gail, do you do any publishing on YouTube via the class or otherwise?
We do a lot of it, but we don't really publish. You're talking more about kind of outreach, your purpose.
Or no, anything. You know, anything that ours, the parents would look at
right.
or anybody else.
Ours is, like I say, we use it a lot for a tool to get it into some form, to mm-hmm. display it some other way. We don't necessarily, we use YouTube as a tool rather than as the presentation, direct presentation method. But we, for example, we use our church screens in the church, and we do a little instead of the Wells connection, we have the Ells connection, I guess, Emmanuel Lutheran School. And we just like to know the folks in the congregation to know more about what goes on in our school. They're not around that much, and they're after their kids leave school, they really don't know what's happening here so much. So producing some things that we show periodically to our own members.
That's a great idea. I bet that's well received too. Just kind of a visual of what's going on in a very important
right.
ministry in the church, which is the school. Right. Sure. Sally, any other links we're going to be sharing that we didn't mention here? Resources.
There are a couple of interesting articles. I came across a how to use YouTube in the classroom video. Believe it or not.
Really? Okay.
That you can watch from the Edutopia website, and Edutopia also has an interesting recent article on the pros and cons of using video in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So good resource there in Edutopia.
Very good. Speaking of using YouTube effectively, our interview this week is with Wendy Greenfield of Hope Schools. They had a video that, when was it launched? Maybe a couple months ago now, called Scholar Ladies. And the last we checked, how many viewers was it, Sally?
They're up over 450,000.
450,000 views. They've been on Fox News. They've been on CNN. Just a remake of is it Beyonce video called
right.
Single Ladies?
Single Ladies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we asked Wendy to come on the show. She is the VP of Development and Communications there at Hope Schools, which is one of our Wells schools. And she was good enough to help us understand what they did there, and maybe some insights as to why this video was so, you know, as they say in the business, viral. Let's listen to our conversation with Wendy. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, we're happy to have Wendy Greenfield from Hope Schools. Good morning, Wendy.
Hi, Martin and Sally.
Now, you are the Vice President of Development and Communications at Hope Schools. Tell us a little bit about what that means, and maybe a little bit more about yourself as well.
Sure. Well, that means that I handle Hope's fundraising and all the ways that we share the Hope story with our key stakeholders. And by stakeholders, I mean all of the folks who care about HOPE, our parents, legislators, donors, volunteers, etc. And those activities can include things like developing HOPE's website, our electronic newsletters, videos, billboards, postcards. I also work with the media quite a bit.
Okay, and that would be one of the reasons that you're talking with us, because we had seen a YouTube video that was that had gone viral, as they say, you know, on the internet, called Scholar Ladies, and we thought, boy, let's talk with somebody over at HOPE Schools about that. Where the show that that you're on today is on focusing on classroom technology, and this is a great example of using technology in the classroom, but it served a number of different purposes. Maybe as a background, you can tell us a little more about what HOPE Schools is, how long they've been in existence, what their mission is, enrollment, those the, kind of the facts and figures of HOPE Schools?
Sure. HOPE Christian Schools is a network of three schools in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and HOPE opened in 2002 with one school that served about 50 students. Today, HOPE serves more than 600 students and their families, and we have two grade schools and a high school. And we specifically set up our schools in tough neighborhoods because we know that all children can learn.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly all new students arrive testing two or more grades below grade level, and about 94% of our students qualify for the federal government's free and reduced meal program. And I'm sharing these statistics with you not because they define our students at all, but rather to put into context the remarkable results that our students have achieved.
Wonderful. And what is your connection with the Wisconsin Synod?
I grew up attending St. John's Church in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Wisconsin Lutheran High School and Wisconsin Lutheran College. And I'm also a founding member of Crossroads Church, which is the first well startup in Chicago.
Right. And what is HOPE School's relationship to the Synod as well?
HOPE is affiliated with the Synod. The majority of our teachers come from Wisconsin Lutheran College and Martin Luther College.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's so you have definitely a flavor there that comes from our worker training institutions and those people who have a good solid Lutheran background. And I'm assuming that, you know, the curriculum and those things that are taught at HOPE Schools is also Christian in nature.
Yes, that's right. We have daily Word of God classes, and we also have chapel services.
Mm-hmm.
So the students can learn about their Savior as they climb the mountain to college.
Awesome.
Very good. Well, we were just real excited to see the Scholar Ladies video take off on YouTube. I just did a quick check, and you're up over 440,000 views on YouTube. Scholar Ladies was part of a HOPE Idol contest that you guys promoted in the school. So there were several videos that were created in the classroom setting. And maybe you can give us a little bit of background on the way it was created and how you managed to go viral so publicly like that.
Sure, it's been a lot of fun. At HOPE, we believe that teaching and learning are exciting, and so we plan lots of contests and activities throughout the year that are designed to teach important lessons to our students in a fun way. And one of those activities is our annual video contest, HOPE Idol, and it's held among our three schools. And this year, HOPE Fortis's video titled Scholar Ladies Won. And that video lets students know that it's cool to study and get good grades. And as you mentioned, it's getting national attention. Nearly 500,000 people have watched it. And numerous organizations have done stories about it, including CNN, the Chicago Tribune, and K-Love Christian Radio. So our students set a goal to get 1,000,000 people to watch Scholar Ladies, and they're about halfway there.
No, I think you'll get there. You certainly have a good head start on it. I saw it just by chance. I was watching Fox News, and it appeared there, and I thought, hey, that's HOPE Schools. I know those guys. And so I did a little more investigating, and then all of a sudden it was all over the place. You know, it was on CNN, as you mentioned, and looks like that's great exposure. What has that meant for the school?
Well, it's been wonderful for us and for our students. We love it because it builds awareness of what it is that we're doing here in Milwaukee. And the kids have had a lot of fun with it, too, especially those who have had a chance to get interviewed so they can learn what it's like to be interviewed on TV or by a radio station.
And it's certainly an opportunity for Christian witness, too. I think anything that puts a Christian school in the public media is a good thing and a good opportunity to share our Christian values and let people know, boy, this is what we're about. So that's cool.
Absolutely. It's been really fun to watch the comments that people make on media websites or some of the blogs that are out there. I think it gives them a whole new perspective on what it can mean to be a Christian, and it allows us to really share that joy that we have as Christians.
So the Hope Idol Contest is just one of the things that you do throughout the school year. You mentioned that you have quite a few activities engaging the students and raising awareness of different technology and things. What about the exposure for Hope, and you being the development and communications person, I'm wondering if there's a plan behind this, if you have certain goals that you want to achieve with the communication that you're doing to give exposure to the school?
Yes, it's so easy and cost-effective to share information by taking advantage of the resources that are available. So we send out our newsletters electronically, and we have a YouTube page. Hope's website is also quite popular. We had about 15,000 visits during the last couple of months. And we use video quite a bit because it's a fast and easy way to share our story. So through our videos, people can take a peek inside Hope without even leaving their chair.
So who did the production work on the video? It looks very nice and well put together, but I'm guessing that you didn't have a professional production studio put that thing together. It was more just the people on the staff?
Yes, we set up a little studio in the classroom and recorded the music and the lyrics and worked together to develop what we call a shot list. That's all the different pictures that are shown in the video. Mm-hmm. We do have a friend who is a camera person who came in and shot it for us.
Sure.
And then we worked with him and let him know how we wanted the video to flow.
Very cool. Now, are the other videos available online as well? You mentioned that this was one of a number of them.
Yes. In fact, if you go to our website, which is hopeschools.org, hopeschools.org, you can click on videos and see a number of videos there.
So I would think that other schools could do similar things. It doesn't sound like there was anything over the top that made this anything different than what maybe another school could do. If the appropriate planning were implemented and just a few uses of free technology, right?
It is really quite easy. I think we shot the whole thing in under 2 hours.
Oh, cool. Right.
And probably the thing that was most time intensive was practicing the dance moves.
Okay.
Which the kids enjoy. I watched some of your other videos, and you've been in ballroom dancing competitions. So fit well,
yes.
I bet.
Yes, they love dancing. Our students competed for the first time in Milwaukee's Mad Hot Ballroom competition and took home 10 awards, including overall ballroom champions.
Cool.
That's awesome. What about from a teaching perspective? Is there an effort, to use technology in the classroom? And, how are the kids responding to the use of technology?
Yes, we rely on technology every day. And our students, particularly our high school students, are impressed and happy that our teachers are so willing to do that. And just as an example, I was talking with some students yesterday, and many of our teachers have Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. And the students tell me that they visit the pages to download their assignments and ask questions. And they really appreciate having that resource available. It makes things a lot easier for them. Of course, they do a lot of texting, too.
Right.
Our teachers are available 24/7 to the students to answer questions. And so that's something that they do. And then also at Hope, our teachers spend twice as much time on math and reading as they would at a typical school, between 90 and 120 minutes a day. So half of that time is spent teaching students at their age-appropriate grade level. So if you're in fifth grade, you'll have a fifth grade math lesson. And then the other half is spent practicing learning at the student's own individual level using computer software. So, for example, if a student is struggling with fractions, then he or she will complete worksheets on fractions, and when ready, take a computerized test. And when the students pass that test, then they're able to move on to master their next math objective. Mm-hmm. And students really enjoy math and reading because they're able to see their progress on a daily basis, and it's fun for them.
That's neat. And I would imagine that many of the students that come in there haven't had many touches on technology, given the setting of the school and the urban nature of your ministry there, that some of them come from poor families, and the ability to get introduced to technology in a learning environment has got to set them up well for going to college. And I think that's the hope that that Hope Schools puts out, that you can go to college, and some of the skills that you're teaching there via technology have got to be helpful.
Absolutely. You know, the days of having a strong back and a good alarm clock are over.
Yes.
You know, students really need to be on the path to college, and I think all of these resources certainly help them do that. And if you ask any of our students what year they're going to college, they can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're always talking about college.
Yeah, and that was really the point of the video as well, and that came across loud and clear, and I think that's part of the viral nature of it too, that they took a pretty secular song and made it you know, very focused, and I think it fit nicely. It was a very natural thing. Thank you, Wendy. Go ahead, Sally. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, give those scholar ladies our best and tell them to keep the A's up, because we're rooting for them.
Well, I will do that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for joining us, and blessings on your ministry there, important work.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Wendy and the good folks at Hope School for letting Wendy share some of those thoughts with us. That's exciting to see some Wells goodness in the YouTube in that viral video stratosphere, over almost 500,000 views. That's incredible.
Yeah, you'll have to check out the link to Hope Schools in our show notes, because they have an excellent website, and their homepage is a mile long these days, because they have links to all the different places where they've gotten coverage. They were in the Chicago Tribune, and you know, television stations from around the country have contacted them. They've done a lot of interviews. The CNN interview is just awesome. It's like 4 or 5 minutes long, so they got a lot of coverage there. Just a lot of neat stuff. I had fun reading some of the blog comments as people were sharing the video on their blog, and one that I thought was really cute, it says, "I'm completely obsessed with this video for the following reasons. Those kids are unbelievably cute, especially the main girl. Also, the pairing of the lyrics with the lip gloss and books. No need to choose between smarts and fashion. And the boys showing that everyone loves good Beyonce-inspired dance. Also, all the kids grinning about their A's. So good." So, I mean, you couldn't pay for that kind of positive, feedback about your Wells Christian education.
Yeah,
so,
and in talking,
really exciting.
And talking with Wendy, they had, you know, really no idea that it would take off, clearly, but I think they're handling the publicity really, really well.
Yeah, and I think thanks to Wendy. She does a great job with her role there.
I think it goes to point to something very important that we alluded to at the beginning of the show, and I guess the fact is websites themselves are great, but they're not necessarily the place people go first these days.
Right. Yep.
You want to be on Facebook, you want to be on YouTube, that's where people look.
Right.
So
it's a difference between a come and see and a go and tell strategy, and you know, the mm-hmm. where the people are is where we need to put our content. So yeah, and that speaks to not just to you know, educational things like this, which wasn't specifically evangelistic in nature, certainly, although it's great exposure for the school. But there's certainly opportunity for our churches there, too. And, you know, we did have a church. Was that last week that we mentioned that, or is that coming up this week from our church in Yakima, Washington, where they were on Fox News? I think that was last week we talked about that, right?
That's right, Mark.
Yeah, so cool. Very cool. Thanks again, Wendy, and you know, blessings on your work there at Hope School, and maybe we'll see some more stuff coming out of there.
Yep, keep climbing that mountain to college. That's the goal.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail, you're our honored guest, so I would assume you have a pick this week.
I do have a pick, and I'm going to select the pick called Dippity, dipity.com. This is not new, but new to me. I've just started playing with it, using it for some things. And it's a social 2.0 tool, as you might guess. And the unique thing about it is it's a timeline. So what you do is you do research on a topic, and then when you put these things into your Dipity timeline, it tags them as to when you added the event. So you can kind of tag your research by the time that it was done. Now, you're working with a group of people on a project, and somebody puts a video in on Monday, the 21st of February. So it's tagged that way. Then the other people in the group look at it and add things. And so it ends up being a timeline that you're building of the project as you create it. Now, that's the way I mostly intend to use it, and that's the way I see it to be most useful for me. That is a very small part of how the site is intended to be used. It's a social network, as I say, and so people have done Dipities on various topics, any topic you could think of. And so you can search for the topic on there and find chronological timelines of events just as well. I think I used the example of Brett Favre. And if you wanted to find out exactly when he made each of his resignation speeches and his <That's right. laughs> the timeline for all the craziness in the past years around him, you can search on Brett Favre and you'll have a good timeline all there for you that's been done by somebody who was a big fan or a collection of people. And it's kind of neat that you get the timeline effect. That's what's unique about Dipity,
like
is the timeline.
Yeah. I'm looking at the site now, and the feature one there is the Haiti earthquake. So you can kind of see.
Yes.
It looks like what you can do is add videos or blog posts or basically any web content to this.
Right.
And the time that you added it, it pegs itself on the timeline, and you can expand or contract the timeline to see, you know, days or months. And that,
right.
Boys, that's a great tool for history, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be neat. I'm just learning it myself. I haven't done anything with the kids on it yet. I know it is a tool that we're going to be using in the Stevens Group, the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference that I speak of. That's one of our main featured tools that we're going to use for collaboration this summer.
Yep.
And, in fact, the creator, Derek Duke, his name is going to be speaking at that conference. So I'm interested to hear him and hear a little bit more about its development and his take on what they expected, you know, it to be useful for.
It looks like you've got a couple different views here. You got a timeline view, a flip book, just a raw list, and a map. So you can kind of see where all these events are as well. Boy, that I think that's
it's got a lot of
topic.
Possibilities.
Yeah. I see ice dancing Olympics 2010. IHOP Free Pancake Day 2010.
That's a big one.
I didn't know about that. I must have missed that. Bummer. All right. The Oscars. Very cool. So that's Dipity, DIPITY.com. Great pick, Gail. Thank you. Sally, what's your pick this week?
I'm going to point our listeners to a webpage full of portable puzzles. And this is with the idea of sharing them in the classroom kind of setting. On my website, I have a webpage called Wacky Wonderful Websites where I have links that are appropriate for the children to make use of during classroom time or potentially when they're away from school as well. And one thing that they can't get enough of is online games. And as soon as I find them, they are on to me and they've, you know, mastered them already. So I was excited to find this huge listing of games. There's probably 30 or more on this webpage. It's by Simon Tathman. And these games you can play online or you can download them and play them locally as well. And what it's going to be good for is I'm going to piece them out to the kids. I'm not going to give them the whole shebang, all 30 puzzles at once, but give them a puzzle at a time. They're very math-oriented type puzzles. and very engaging. Pretty simple website, but pretty engaging for my students, I believe. And so just wanted to add that to your list. If you're a teacher out there building resources for your class and want to engage them with games, especially math-oriented games, this looks like a good place to go.
Great, great resource. I like it. All right, my pick is for the serious webmasters out there who are really concerned about typography. You know, typography on the internet is still kind of in the dark ages, I would say. There's only a few fonts that you can use on your web page effectively because that's the limitations of the browser. But that's kind of changing with the newer browsers especially. And there's services popping up like the one I'm picking this week called Typekit that are making that a whole lot better and more interesting. Typekit.com is essentially a font linking service that hosts high quality fonts that you can use on your website just by subscribing to the service, adding a line or two of JavaScript to your site, and then knowing a little bit of CSS so that you can attach those specific fonts to different areas on your site. So if you've got body text that is of a certain type, you can pick one of their fonts, and they've got all kinds from very nice type foundries, they call them, that allow you to really customize the site so that you don't have to embed graphics of images or text to get the pretty looking fonts, that you can actually use real honest to goodness typefaces that use this service. So essentially it goes out, it grabs the font file from this Typekit service or their servers, brings them down to your site, and then displays them to your visitor. There's all kinds of cool and useful fonts on the website. There is a free, basically it's to allow you to try it before you buy it, but it gives you 5 gigabytes of monthly bandwidth, a trial library of fonts, which is actually pretty good. It's attached to one domain, so you have to tell it what domain you're at, and you can have 2 fonts per site. You go up the scale into personal or portfolio or performance categories, and for the kind of the most popular one, it's basically $50 a year. You get the full type library. You can support up to 5 websites. You have unlimited fonts per site. I tried this out on my own site. Really, really easy to use. You don't need a lot of technical experience. You just need to be able to add some JavaScript to the header section of your site and know a little bit of CSS to be able to assign this stuff. But beyond that, really easy way to introduce some nice-looking typography into your website. So try it for free, typekit.com.
Interesting, Martin. I'm on the website and looking at their trial library. I'm using Internet Explorer 8, and it's not working for me, and I'm guessing that is an Internet Explorer fault. It looks like it works fine in Firefox and Safari. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, they do have some disclaimers on there as browsers evolve and as they evolve the service. But actually, I tried it with Internet 8, and I didn't have any problems, so I'm not sure what the issue is there. But give it a shot. Your mileage may vary.
Okay.
All right? But you can't beat the price for free, and I think you're going to see more and more of these kinds of services. So, yeah, it's good to pay attention to type, just like you do in a newsletter or something like that. And now you have that ability on your website.
That's a pretty common question that I get with different people working on their church and school websites. They really want to branch out and use more, and it's really hard to explain why they can't, you know, because they can see cool fonts that are installed locally.
Exactly.
On their
it's not
computer.
The same as opening up Microsoft Word.
Exactly. Right. So
now, I did not try this with Final Web. But I'm going to bet that this might work. I'm gonna go and ask the guys over at Final Web to see if this would be available to them, because I know they're kind of redoing their entire architecture to better support CSS, and that's definitely a requirement. So check it out. Let's go to community feedback, Sally.
Well, Martin, I picked up on some buzz from you,
some
actually.
Buzz, yes.
Interesting Google conversation buzz. In your Google Buzz, which is the new social aspect that Google released recently. Mm-hmm. And someone, I think it was maybe Dan Witte,
mm-hmm.
who was corresponding with you, following up on our discussion last week about The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture, Shane Hibbs' book. And I got a kick out of this because we were talking about how the medium is the message, the big Marshall McLuhan quote. And he shared a link to search for putting the words of Amazing Grace to the tune of Gilligan's Island. And boy, did I get a kick out of that. I cannot sing Amazing Grace to Gilligan's Island, even though it fits, even though I listen to somebody do it. Talk about a good representation of how the medium really affects
it. Yeah, and that's the whole point of that. And I'd heard that before. I hadn't thought about it when we were talking through our book review last week, but that is true. Even though the words are exactly the same, the lyrics are exactly the same, you put it to the tune, some different tune, and it changes its composition somehow. I did a little more research and ran across another blog post that actually attached the words of Amazing Grace to another song, a pop song from the 60s. Sally, you're probably too young to remember The Animals from the 1960s, but you probably remember the song House of the Rising Sun.
Sure.
And they did the same thing here. Let me see if I can play this. I got this right here. Hang on. Can you hear that?
There is a house in New Orleans.
Your favorite town there, Sally.
Yeah,
and it's been the ruin of many a poor.
It's the second
and
verse here.
God, I know I'm Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It just doesn't have the same effect at all.
That's a little more tolerable than a Gilligan's Island, but it does change it. So, and I think that was the whole point. So anyway, enough of my buzz stuff.
Interesting.
Who else is talking to us?
We heard from Pastor Jeremiah Gum, who's out at Cross of Christ in Liverpool, New York, and he shared two interesting links. They're kind of different. The first one is titled, Is SEO, or Search Engine Optimization, the Future of Evangelism?
Yeah, I saw that article,
really
too.
Some great points there about being able to search on certain topics and have relevant material come up from a Christian perspective, from your congregation or whatever.
Yeah, is that the article, if I'm not mistaken, is that the article that talks about searching by location so you could see what the trending topics are, what everybody is searching for in your particular geography even? So if you're in New York or if you're in Austin or if you're in Milwaukee, you can kind of get a sense for what the people online are doing.
Yeah, and he gave specific examples, like imagine someone searching for a Chicago divorce attorney.
Right.
And, you know, instead she comes up with some advice from your congregation,
yep,
a relevant page on marriage counseling or, you know, free help to help make the marriage work or whatever. Or another one, a teen being fed up and considering suicide and searches on that and comes up with suicide prevention resources and that kind of thing. So just a different way of looking at outreach via the web, and some real interesting points that they make in this article.
Helps you, I think it helps you sharpen the focus of your content, and it's one reason I'm a big proponent of blogs on church websites, because that gives you the opportunity to address relevant issues and may help people stumble across your church and your content. So, good stuff.
Yep. The other article that Pastor Gum shared talked about not optimizing for mobile devices and basically how good things are looking on mobile devices even without any special effort. And I think a lot of blog templates and things like that already automatically adjust to be viewed well on a mobile device. And they have an example there. They're showing a picture of an iPod Touch showing their website. And basically, it's kind of a relief to not have to worry about a mobile optimization version of your web presence. So if you haven't checked out your website on a mobile device, maybe that's a good thing to do and see how you're looking.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that's where the industry is going. And if you're not presentable, you know, on a handheld, then that's got a little bit of work to do. So moving right along.
We picked up on a comment from Pastor David Ernst. He was requesting via our Google sidebar on the website an interview with someone from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary or Martin Luther College, possibly looking at how they're preparing their graduates and the use of technology. So great suggestion, and we'll look into that possibility.
We can pick up a couple people that might fit that bill. Great suggestion. Thanks, Dave.
Sure. Jason Schmidt, our favorite twittering teacher from Omaha, Nebraska, shared some tweets to Pocket Mod. This is a fun site that I've used with the kids in my classroom as well, Jason, and basically allows you to print on a sheet of paper an 8-page booklet that you can quickly fold into a little booklet and have the ability to customize each of the pages that are part of that little booklet. So you end up with something that's about the size of a business card when it's all folded together, but it's actually a little small 8-page booklet. And I've had the kids create these around literature assignments and things like that, you know, make a booklet, and maybe some of the pages allow them to draw on it or have, you know, article, little short summaries or things like that that they've written. So there's lots of possibilities with Pocket Mod.
I have a feeling I might need my reading glasses to use one of those.
Yeah, I'm a reading glasses kind of person too, Martin. Yeah. I can commiserate with you there.
Okay.
He shared another link to something called Page Packer, which is available for the Mac. And I haven't played with it specifically. I think it's a download. Mm-hmm. So you can create a similar thing on a Mac computer. So check out those links from Jason.
And our other favorite twittering teacher is on the show today, and she had a tweet about aviary.
Gail.
Go ahead, Gail.
Go ahead and tell us.
Well, actually, Jason, I think, beat me to the punch, or somebody else had one on there about aviary, but, or in fact, last week you talked about it and how it had gone free.
Yeah.
It's a free resource now. Image editing is why I'm attracted to free image editing, and I liked the fact that you can, they have a little browser piece too, so that you can put it just right up in your browser, and whenever you're working on an image and you want to pull that up and use the instant imaging, you can just hit that and bring up that component. So I think it's handy, it's free, it works, and I like the fact that it deals with layers. I really think layers are one of the hardest things. I'm always trying to get rid of the background layer to on an object, and this does it very cleanly, nicely, and easily.
Yeah, and great application for schools because it's online, so it's available
and free.
And free. Yeah, plus some vector editing capabilities now too, so not just bitmap. So that's a great addition. So it seems like they're branching out.
I know a lot of the kids at our school are carrying their digital cameras with them to school, have them in their backpacks. So, you know, they are of the digital age. They're ready to do photo editing and image editing, even at a young age these days. So they're excited by this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And finally, our favorite tweeting Wells Tech host.
Well, one of two, at least. Yeah, I just had to mention this one. I got a kick out of it, and it fits well with our classroom technology theme. Ran across a tweet yesterday to the blog called The Nerdy Teacher, and the title of the blog post was Everything I Needed to Know About Technology Integration, as in bringing technology into the classroom, I learned from watching Star Wars. And this is a cool post and oh so very true. And he pulls out these various quotes from Yoda, from Princess Leia, from Darth Vader, and, you know, applies them to integrating technology in the classroom. And it's humorous, but very well done. So if you're a geek at heart like me and want to get a good smile, check out this blog post.
Sounds good.
I'm just reading a couple of these. A lot of them are from Darth Vader. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we should wrap things up. Next week, because we are in the midst of the Lenten season, we thought it would be a great opportunity to look at Lenten and Easter resources, online resources, and there's a bunch of them. So Sally and I will be doing our homework, and if you tune in, we can share some of those online resources, whether that be classroom or worship or personal study. There's all kinds of stuff out there. And we will play an interview with Pastor Guy Marquardt from Lodi, California, who has one of those resources that you might be interested in, an interactive passion history. So that'll be coming up next week in episode 121. Let's close the show with the music of Revelation from Wisconsin Lutheran College, their song Via Dolorosa, another very appropriate song for the Lenten season from their album Once for All. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Teach us.